There are, of course, those who do not want us to speak.
Catapult and propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I am Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our bunker. It's a bunker filled with joy here on March the 4th, Sunday, 2007.
It is. We've got a new addition to the bunker family.
We do. We've got a roommate.
Woo-hoo! That's right.
Not what you think.
No. Sharon found an ad from somebody in the area who was looking for a home for a five-year-old male Lhasa Apso. And if you followed us along, you know that Murphy was half Lhasa. So we pretty much knew what we were getting.
Well, that was a rumor anyway.
The rumor, yeah. We never found any documentation on that. He might have been a sleeper agent. We're not sure. But
we found a dog that was looking to go into, hiding, actually.
Yeah.
Witness protection program is what he said.
So our new member of the bunker here is Sammy. At least for now. We haven't sure if we're going to keep that name. But
Yeah, we're kind of going with Samson for now. His original name was Sebastian. Mm-hmm. And he was called Sabby. He just looked up at me. So we're calling him Sammy, which is very close, and he does answer to that, which we think is probably fitting because he's got that long, luxurious hair, like Samson.
Sure.
And his power is in his hair, just like
Yeah, we thought perhaps in a sort of a dog noir sort of vein, he could be like Sam Spade, but he's a male, which would make him Sam Neutered. But other than that, it works. So we got a lot to talk about this week. We'll have a little discussion with Beth Fay, recorded earlier today, coming later in the program.
Because she's got a new show, her own podcast.
Yes, and it sounds like it's going to be fascinating. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk with Beth about that in just a few minutes. Also want to let you know that Dave Duncan and his New World Order scam website, which was a very long and involved...
It's got a much shorter URL. Much easier to find now.
Yes.
Just thenwoscam.com.
Right. And so much easier to remember, thenwoscam.com, and it is a...
you can find that link. We'll have it in the show notes, but also if you go to our site, Connecting the Dots, and if you were here last week, you know what that is. Also, if you go to Watcher Magazine, you'll see it. It's our new site. It's a good clearinghouse for connecting the dots, literally, between all the stories that we talk about.
Yeah, that is definitely a site that you need to take advantage of. We talked about that last week, and it is really kind of a site that devotes itself more to analysis than to breaking news.
It really has. Watcher Magazine was essentially, it started out to be sort of an analysis site and turned into breaking news. And in many ways, I think Derek and I sort of unconsciously were moving toward a Christian or a Christian worldview version of Drudge Report, but ended up not doing that because it just it takes way too much time. Derek is having to pick him up now.
Yes.
Now, I want to be in
on
the show.
Part of the show.
I want to contribute. Connecting the Dots is a really great site. We've migrated all the stories over from Watcher Magazine. You're not going to miss a thing. They're categorized. If you are interested in 9/11 stuff, you can click on the 9/11 category. If you're interested in wars and rumors of wars or Iran or Iraq, whatever, you can take a look at them. Just it's an amazing resource.
One of the great things about WordPress is that it makes it very easy to migrate one site to another, but also the search function available for WordPress installations, WordPress websites, WordPress-based websites, is very, very powerful. So if you've got a question on anything that we've talked about, really, on PID Radio over the last couple of years, for example, if you want to do a search for the finders, use
just
the search
put in
box,
the finders.
And it will pop up all of the articles that have been published to Watcher Magazine and now to Connecting the Dots over the last couple of years.
I use that search box all the time.
Right.
The other day I was trying to find out what the history of the Divine Strike ordeal has been.
Right.
You just type it in there. It brings up all the stories. Now, mind you, I want to warn you, because we have migrated over, I'm noticing when I do a search that sometimes I'll get repetitions of a story.
Ah, okay.
Because it was importing over categories.
Yes.
So if a story was in more than one category, it brought it in once for every category.
It wasn't supposed to, but apparently
it
did.
No, it wasn't supposed to, but it did. So, I've been trying to delete them as I find them, but it's better to have too much than not enough.
That's right. So make use of that resource. If you have any suggestions for features that you would like to see, things that we might be able to add, boy, I'll tell you what, WordPress as a an engine for a site of this site this type is really powerful. And so we may be able to find some.
Frankly, these sites are becoming really, really big. I do want to say I'm very excited about the way the Connecting the Dots is turning out. It originally was a registration only. Register for free, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
But we've even taken that off.
Mm-hmm.
The deal, though, is if you are registered, you get to comment. Only those who are registered and logged in can comment on the stories. But the big news is we have a new contributor.
Yes.
New columnist Indira Singh.
And we're going to have her on PID Radio at some point.
Soon. We've been talking to her all this last week through email.
Right. If you've not made the, if you're not familiar with Indira Singh, you really need to do a little digging at through the web and find out a little bit about her. She went public with her suspicions about 9/11 and some connections between some very well-connected money men and the events of 9/11 and Al-Qaeda.
Well, our wall of paranoia.
Yes, she was the inspiration for the wall of paranoia. Sharon put all that up on the 4x8 whiteboard when we were listening to an interview with Indira and Michael Corbin over in Colorado. So she has done some amazing research. She has done so at risk of her life.
Mm-hmm,
she's
literally
been run over by a hit-and-run driver. She had the lug nuts on the front wheels of her Jeep fall off. So she's gotten under somebody's skin. But she will be contributing some articles to the Connecting the Dots website as we move forward.
You know, that is a great segue, though, literally, because she has come out honestly, and it's put her life on the line. That segues over to a story that was just in the news a couple of days ago. There was an expert who claimed that the Kremlin was involved in Litvinenko's death, and indeed that gentleman who went on NBC, along with another man, they are both now dead.
Yeah. It is kind of funny because when people were talking about this, you know, being a the Litvinenko situation being a Kremlin sponsored hit, the response that I had and that I think others had was that this was just too obvious, too clumsy for the KGB, that or the former KGB, that Moscow, if they wanted to take somebody out, had the means and the resources to do it in a way that would just eliminate the guy quietly without drawing any attention to itself.
You know, it's one of those things where it's the obvious answer and then you think, wait a minute, it's too obvious. Maybe it's so obvious that it actually is the answer. The butler did it.
Sometimes the obvious answer is the right one. The gentleman's name was Paul Joyal, J-O-Y-A-L. He was on Dateline NBC just a couple of weekends ago. And
Well, and the other person who was on there with him, Daniel McGrory of the Times of London, he had written about the Litvinenko case. He died on February 20th before it was broadcast. And he died at home, supposedly, and I say that supposedly, allegedly, because I have no proof. But it's said that he died of a heart attack. So it's just really interesting that both men are now dead. Two men that appeared, and they weren't that old, are suddenly dead. And, of course, Joel, I always want to call him Jor-El, I'm sorry. It's not funny. He was shot in front of his home. But all they were doing is just saying what they believed. And, and both men were experts in Russian intrigue, so one would think that they had the investigated information to connect those dots.
Yeah, Joel was a longtime consultant on Russian affairs and security, served 9 years as the director of security for the Senate Intelligence Committee. So he was a guy who knew his way around and was pretty well connected, apparently, perhaps too well connected for his own own good. Elsewhere around the world, as we take a look at parapolitics and geopolitics, Iran has made it clear that they are ready to strike out in the Gulf if something breaks loose over there, whether an attack from the United States or Israel.
They are, and he also, he just made a trip to Saudi Arabia, and while he was there, he let it be known to King Abdullah that he has operatives in place throughout the Middle East that will strike Western concerns. So that means businesses, oil. Watch for oil prices to go up if all of this hits the fan.
Oh, sure. Again,
it would have anyway, but I mean, what he's saying is we plan on taking out everything that the West owns.
Yeah. 30-40% of the world's oil goes through the Straits of Hormuz, which we pointed out a couple of weeks ago is well within range of those new sunburn missiles that they own. But according to an article in the Telegraph from London, secret networks of agents working undercover as teachers, doctors, and nurses at Iranian-owned schools and hospitals around the Middle East are ready to, in almost a Black Awakening type of...
I'm so glad you said
type
that
of operation.
Because that's exactly what I thought when I read that. I thought, oh my goodness, when I first read the headline, I thought he was going to say throughout the world. And no, he only said the Middle East. But imagine if indeed there were operatives like that throughout the world.
Right. And what they're doing, apparently, is recruiting among the Shiite minorities in many of these Sunni countries, like Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Jordan, where the Shias are in the minority. They are the majority in Iraq and in Iran, also in Bahrain. Bahrain, as I understand it, is ruled by a Sunni minority. The only country in the world really ruled by a Shiite majority is Iran. And now, sort of, Iraq. The Shiites, trained by Iran, these teachers, these nurses, these policemen working in other countries are recruiting other members of the Shiite sect, waiting to rise up and create havoc amongst, you know, sectarian violence by taking on their Sunni brothers and sisters.
And that's the kind of thing that, were it to happen over here, were a Black Awakening or a Muslim Awakening or whatever you want to call it, a call to arms, happen. Doug Hagman and Sean Osborne have been screaming that from the top of their bell towers for years now.
It is just a dynamic that isn't talked about by the major media when we analyze what's going on in the Middle East. It's, you know, those Muslim extremists lumping them all together. Well, it's like, you know, calling stem cell research all the same thing. There's a difference between adult and embryonic. There's a difference between Sunni and Shiite. The Shias and the Sunnis don't get along. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt have made it very clear to the United States, apparently to the point that Dick Cheney was summoned to Saudi Arabia several weeks ago. You remember that trip that he made where he talked and met with King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia? He was basically summoned by the King of Saudi Arabia to be told, we will not stand by and let our Sunni brothers in Iraq be slaughtered by these Shiite death squads. Do something about it. That leads to the question, what is America's role in Iraq going to be? We're put in a position of basically trying to clamp down on things and make them quit fighting one another, which hasn't worked to this point and I don't think is going to work even with the surge in troops. Secondly, pulling out and letting the fighting burn itself out, which, of course, the Saudis said they're not going to allow to happen. And they've got ways of pressuring us because we depend on a lot of Saudi oil. Or thirdly, means picking sides in the fight. Picking sides. And... you know, backing one side or the other, which means probably backing the Shiites, but then trying to keep control of what they do so that they don't go hog wild and just massacre the Sunnis in revenge for what they suffered under Saddam.
You know, they're playing a dangerous game over there. In fact, another story that was in the news this last week, and we're trying not to go very fast. We really aren't. So please, you know, if you find that we're jumping stories, understand they really are connected. Connecting the dots.
And again, all the links to these articles will be in the show notes at www.pidradio.com.
Also, generally, we tend to talk about stories that we've actually put up on our website. And granted, I know it's no longer watchyourmagazine.com, but you can still go there and you can still look at the stories because I've got a feed going in. Thanks to Derek. He gave me the way to do it. But you can also go to Connecting the Dots, and that's just peeringintodarkness.com/CTD for Connect the Dots. The story was... Condoleezza Rice testifying to Congress, and she referred to Northern Iraq as Kurdistan. It is not officially in any way recognized as Kurdistan.
Yeah, in fact, nobody officially calls it Kurdistan except for the Kurds
that are living there.
Right, and that's not something that the Turks or the Iranians because the Kurdish territory, the territory that they want is their homeland, extends into Turkey and Iran.
So that tells me that she's been somewhere. They're calling it Kurdistan.
Right.
It was just a slip because she's accustomed to calling it that. Because somewhere along the line, the tripartite Iraq plan has gone into, you know, they're implementing it.
Right. The Kurds in the north, the Sunnis in the middle, the Shiites in the south.
Mm-hmm.
That's
no way.
Likely the way it's going to be.
Kurds, no way.
Oh, we slay us. I think you're right, and I think that there was a law passed this week that is important. A law in Iraq passed this past week that will undergird this new tripartite system, and that is the law outlining, detailing how oil revenues in Iraq will be divided up. One central oil ministry that will divvy up oil revenues to the various factions within the country.
Because, now, correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm trying to picture, do you think visually? I tend to think visually, and whenever I'm trying to recall a story, I try to see it in my head. I have this image in my head of the Kurds really controlling an area that has the most oil fields. Am I wrong on that?
I believe that's correct, because right now the majority of the oil production in Iraq is coming from the south in the Shiite territories, but the fields with the greatest potential for future development are in the north.
That's what I thought.
Right. Meanwhile, however, one of the radical Sunni groups out there, the Islamic State of Iraq, that Laura Mansfield's been reporting on for some time, claims that their territory extends up to and includes the area around Mosul, which is part of that Kurdish territory.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they want to. I mean, basically, there's nothing but a lot of sand in the center part of the Sunni area of Iraq. They get bupkis, in other words. They control the routes into Syria, which is like big whoop. No, the Sunnis.
There's a lot of unrest there in
that's
quote unquote
Anbar province.
Kurdistan.
Well, the Kurdish areas actually are probably the quietest in the whole country.
Well, wasn't there a big rally there? I'm thinking about the story that I just posted to CTD this last week. Connecting the dots. It's about the PKK rally. Is that what it was?
Yes. And it's not really violent unrest. It's, political unrest. They are...
Well, that's what I meant. Sorry.
Right. And this was the picture that you posted with the story about Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
They are demonstrating because they want their own independence. They've been struggling for this for a long, long time. We promised to help them get it in the first Gulf War, and then we left them, abandoned them, basically,
yes,
to suffer the gas attacks of Saddam Hussein, which were revenge for their support in the first Gulf War. I don't know what ultimately is going to happen, but I've just got an ugly feeling that when it becomes politically inconvenient to support the Kurds for their help, we will abandon them again. And the Turks and the Iranians and the Arabs of Iraq will divvy them up.
Let me bring up a question that will lead eventually to another item that you and I were talking about earlier. The Tecumseh question.
Tecumseh question.
Now, am I right? Tecumseh was the one who tried to unite
the Indian tribes,
nations?
Right, just before and during the War of 1812.
Okay. Now,
yes.
Think of the unrest over in the Middle East as the Indian nations.
Okay.
Of a century or century and a half ago, about a century ago. And imagine that we're promising this tribal leader this deal, this tribal leader this deal.
Uh-huh.
Now, Tecumseh wanted to get around all of that, and he wanted to get them all together. So they weren't fighting against each other anymore.
Right.
They were all fighting the white guy.
Right.
Imagine if all of the Middle Eastern Muslim nations got together under one leader.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking prophecy here.
Right.
And decided, let's go against the Western guy.
It would make things a lot more difficult.
Which leads to the movie you and I were talking about a few minutes ago.
Yes. It's highly promoted. I mean, it's a heavy promotion for a movie called 300.
And I'll bet when you saw the promos for 300, it never dawned on you that PID Radio would be talking about it.
This, if you're not familiar with 300, it's... it's drawn from a graphic novel by the guy by Frank Miller, who did the Sin City novels, graphic novels, which were turned into a movie with Bruce Willis and Mickey Rourke.
It's based on an historical event.
But yes, 300 itself was based on the Battle of Thermopylae in 480 BC, in which a group of 300 Spartans with some allies from some of the other Greek city-states held off hundreds of thousands of Persian soldiers at the pass of Thermopylae long enough for the rest of the Greek city-states to get their acts together. They inflicted such damage and caused such a delay in the Persian advance that the Greeks were able to hold off the Persian invasion. If the Battle of Thermopylae had not happened, if King Leonidas and his 300 Spartans and their allies had not been able to hold off the Persians in what was one of the most famous last-ditch, you know, last stands mm-hmm. in history, we in the West now might have a completely different view of history. Because you think about the influence that Greek thought had on all of Western history and development. Think of the influence that Greek thought had on the development of Christianity. The New Testament was written in Greek. Imagine if it had been written in Farsi instead.
Mm-hmm. Take a look at the Persian Empire at that time. It was huge.
It included, in 480 BC, it included all of the Holy Land.
Oh, pretty much name any of the countries that are listed in Ezekiel 38 and 39.
Right.
Except for maybe Russia, if it's in there. And you've got them.
Yeah. So this was a huge, huge turning point, not just for the history of Greece, but for all of history since 480 BC. It's just an amazing turning point. I mean, God would have worked through whatever way it had turned out.
He
foresaw the way it was going to happen. But, you know, the story, and it's been highly stylized for the movie 300. I read a more historical kind of, an historic novel, but a more, more earth, say, naturalistically based account.
From what I've seen,
Nicole and I took a look at the graphic novel in a bookstore a couple of weeks ago, and Frank Miller gets into some, you know, some wild stuff mm-hmm. there. But I mean, it is a huge story. It's just when you think about what these guys accomplished, 300 men standing off hundreds of thousands. I mean, it makes the Alamo look like a day in the park.
Here's what's really interesting too: is Leonidas supposedly, I don't know, I haven't seen the papers, but he claimed to be descended from Hercules.
Mm-hmm. And if you've done any of the reading of Peter Goodgame's works, which we recommend, you see the Hercules was just one of the manifestations of the deified Nimrod.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I've seen arguments that Persia was based on a population that was actually part of the Perseus
mm-hmm.
settlements. So when the Table of Nations takes place and the divvying up to the 70 watchers, fallen angels, took place, it's really interesting to take a look at the mythologies. Now, mm-hmm. granted, we're talking about the Greek names. So when you see Xerxes and all of those are usually the Greek versions of the names. But Xerxes from the 300, from Thermopylae,
mm-hmm.
was the grandson of Cyrus the Great. Cyrus the Great, you remember in the Old Testament, was the one who declared that the Jews could go back and rebuild the temple.
Mm-hmm. And in about the year 480 BC, the reconstruction of the walls in Jerusalem was underway. I don't think it was complete yet. Just to give you a frame of reference as to where it was in the history of the Old Testament, it was about the time that Nehemiah was overseeing mm-hmm. the reconstruction of the walls of Jerusalem.
Exactly. Cyrus the Great. Cyrus is the Greek version. The Persian version
mm-hmm.
is very close to the Hebrew version, which is Koresh. Sound familiar, folks?
Very interesting.
David Koresh?
Yeah.
Was he claiming that he descended not just from the Jewish throne, but also from the Persian throne?
Hmm. That's very interesting. The Persian kingdom was a long time... there were several groups of peoples that really fought for control of the ancient Near East. The Persians, the Medes, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Egyptians, and for one brief moment, the Hebrews, the Jews, mm-hmm. under David and Solomon, had control over a big chunk of that area. It's really interesting to look at this movie and the way it's... being put forward out there, the evil Persians wanting to take over the world, being stood off by one brave leader who sees
from the
implications.
West.
Yes, from the West, who sees
who
the implications.
Could this be?
Yeah, makes you wonder, doesn't it?
I know, Bush.
Yeah, because the rest of the world doesn't seem to see the same threat in Ahmadinejad that some of us in America do. I'm not sure that President Bush and his advisors see the threat in the same way as we do, or for the same reasons that we do.
Here's an interesting thing that I found out. I wasn't aware of this, that the Spartans that were in that 300
mm-hmm.
were part of a select group that were all selected because they had sons who mm-hmm. could survive them. They had bloodlines they could leave behind.
Right.
Isn't it interesting that the whole call it the Illuminati, the New World Order, whatever you want to call it, that the bloodlines are so extremely important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And here we see Bush Jr.
Mm-hmm.
is mm-hmm. the one who is supposedly leading the Spartan charge against the Xerxes of today,
mm-hmm.
Ahmadinejad.
Very interesting. Well, we'd be interested to hear what you think about that. The forum is back open, by the way.
Oh, it is. Yes. And another thing I want to throw in that little mix is the Bible prophecies that says a goat
will come
from the west without touching the ground.
Which is really interesting.
And conquer Persia.
Because, yeah, that was Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Because crossing the world without touching the ground certainly sounds like modern air transportation, does it not?
Exactly. These prophecies, almost always, if they are for now and they were given back then, they had an immediate fulfillment to show that the prophet was telling the truth. Well, in this case, it was an angel telling the truth
mm-hmm.
to Daniel. But to show that Daniel was telling the truth, it did happen. Alexander came in. But it had a future fulfillment because touching the ground is not something Alexander was able to do, unless you want to use it as a metaphor.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting that literally it can be done now without touching the ground.
That's right. That's right. Very interesting, and perhaps a little deeper symbolism in the movie than maybe even the movie makers intended. So I do look forward to seeing the movie.
So do I. We don't go to the movie very often. I think that's one that I might actually go to the theater for. Might actually scrape up a few bucks and.
Yeah. Artistically, the director who's working on this film is the same guy that did the movie Sin City by Frank Miller, which, frankly,
stylistic.
We've caught a little bit here and there on cable, but neither one of us.
A little I saw was just a little too.
Well,
open.
You know, exactly. It's like film noir, but of course done from a 21st century perspective, which means you can show a lot more and get away with a lot more than they could back in the 40s, which is too bad because stylistically, again, it was very artistically done. Look forward to seeing 300 and seeing how they depict that story.
I know. Well, what else is going on in the news? Oh, hey, here we go. I'm sorry, I know you were looking like you had a story, but I want to make sure we fit this in. Radical Rabbi, by the AP, wants to renew animal sacrifices on the Mount.
That is exactly the story I had next
is
on my list.
Yep. How about that?
Because this is a big story. This
it's
is one I mentioned this on the air the other day, and I doubt that most of our listeners really caught the significance, most of them anyway.
You've got a few, though.
You've got a few that are right in on this.
I mean, they've got probably an array of tinfoil hats.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I say that with much respect.
Yeah, we're working on developing an array around the city, so that we can sort of protect the city here. We figure if we get them in the right configuration, we can deflect the beams. A member of the Sanhedrin, which has been reconstituted. The Sanhedrin has been reconstituted. I know we've mentioned this once or twice before, but maybe not made a big enough deal of it. Do you get the significance of that? That is huge. In order to reinstitute the animal sacrifices on the Temple Mount, they had to have a Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin has been reconstituted, and
it consists of 71. Members.
71, yeah. And Rabbi Dov Stein, Dov, D-O-V.
I think it's pronounced Dove.
Dove? You're probably
Dove,
right.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Was interviewed by a newspaper in Jerusalem and told them that he believes the animal sacrifices should be renewed. Now, he not only... Now, it's interesting that the news media portrayed this as a radical organization. These guys aren't so radical. These guys are at the very heart of what would be considered Orthodox.
Yes. Yeah, but really, you're right. It's very interesting that it was considered... very radical. I saw this is actually from Ynet News, but there are a number of various versions of this that came out about the same day. And AP and Reuters they clearly didn't understand what was going on. And you'd mm-hmm. think Ynet would have understood something about it. But what I think is really interesting is he's calling for a king.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They want a king, presumably from the line of David. Now, I shouldn't be guessing, but they are calling for a king to be selected and to rule over the nation of Israel once
mm-hmm.
again. Now, what I thought was interesting is that not only do they suggest that this be done, Rabbi Stein says he thinks that the Muslims will actually go along with this.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And who was it was telling us that that's what it was David Lowe, who was it said that he believes that there will be an end time, maybe it's David Duncan, that there will be an end time church, that the Antichrist will actually be...
No, Mike Heiser.
Mike Heiser. Thank you. Sorry about that. I'm naming names and I didn't even know what I was talking about.
In his book, Islam and Armageddon, he believes that the Antichrist will be the guy who can convince the Jews and the Muslims that their scriptures are not incompatible.
Mm-hmm.
And Rabbi Stein apparently believes the same way. He said, and I quote, the Omar Mosque, which is the Dome of the Rock, built by Caliph Omar, was actually intended to safeguard the site for the Jews. Islam hasn't always been so hostile, which is true. Despite its hatred and massacres among us, Islam sees in Judaism a source and a guide. I think the moment will come that Muslims understand the need to build the temple and go along with us. And to that end, they intend to try to sacrifice on Passover this year, which is coming up this spring.
They have to do that one first.
I don't know if they've got a red heifer, then we're moving ahead pretty quickly, aren't we?
If I understand correctly, well, I think the last red heifer that was born might be the right age. Seems like they have to be a certain age, 3 years, 2 years, something like that. When they're born, now, again, it's been a while since I read any of these, so if I'm mistaken, please forgive me.
Mm-hmm.
When these redhead, there have been several, and each one has been born with no blemishes, only red hair,
mm-hmm.
and they get to a certain age, and suddenly white hair stop popping in. It has to be an unblemished, totally red hair, red heifer, which mm-hmm. is very, very rare.
Right.
And only in the last 30 years or so have there been any born. My understanding is that the high priest has to cleanse himself before he can cleanse anybody else. There has to be a ritual sacrifice of burning of this red heifer.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be the first thing that happens to get the ritual cleansing started before they can do anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very complicated process. If you go through the Old Testament, and I know it looks really, it's kind of difficult to wade through, but if you go through the book of Leviticus and the procedures that had to be followed for the animal sacrifices, the instructions given to God by Moses are very detailed. But what you come away with when you do read through that is that there were very specific instructions for how to deal with the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And it all comes back to the blood is the life, and why God was so adamant that... human blood should not be shed, that we should not shed human blood. It's also, I think, explains why so many of these false religions to the fallen gods, the ones who were the gods of ancient, to many of the ancient peoples around the Hebrews, you know, Molech, especially, Chemosh. But then you get into the Americas and some of the real bloodthirsty sacrifices that took place, you know, the Aztecs,
mm-hmm.
And so forth, why human blood was such an important part of their rituals. The blood is the life. God forbade it, but the fallen demanded it.
It's so funny when you started talking about that, my mind started going in a lot of directions because you and I have discussed this topic so many times. And I'll just briefly say one of the topics we have talked about with regard to the blood and what it means in the supernatural, the spiritual world, is the question, is bloodshed in film equivalent in some way to literal bloodshed? Because those slasher movies are getting worse and worse and worse.
And there seem to be more and more of them. Right?
Yes.
The blood almost seems to drip right off the screen. It's mm-hmm.
At the very least, it makes me wonder if some sort of door isn't open spiritually. Russ Dizdar has talked about that, mm-hmm. ways that they can get in and influence you. And it makes me wonder if you're sitting in a theater without really being prayed up and covered with the blood and the spirit, is there something that happens as you let down that suspension of disbelief and really get into the story?
Mm-hmm.
There are times you watch a movie, it's like you walk out and you feel like you've experienced it in real life.
Yeah, and sometimes you feel like you come out and you need a shower. But yeah, there is really a proliferation of movies that aren't really horror movies anymore. They're almost like watching torture films.
Mm-hmm.
The Saw movies. Oh. The first one, yeah, there was a lot of, there was some gore in it, but there was an awful lot of tension and puzzle solving. But movies that have gone beyond that, like Wolf Creek that we talked about, The Hostel, which are nothing more than voyeuristic torture sessions.
They are glorifying stories that we find on the news all the time. And when the stories come in, we all go, oh, how horrifying. How could anybody do that? Hey, let's go see that movie down at the...
Right. Yeah, we're not making the connection between the two. So, again, it's an important question and one that we should explore for a whole program sometime.
Well, exactly. I think that would be a really good idea, and perhaps get on a couple of experts like Russ Dizdar, for instance, and maybe Joe Jordan and some others. There was another story that I thought of when you were talking about the blood sacrifice, and it's just escaped my head right now. It's just... flipped away. So if you have something else,
I'll tell you what. Why don't we do this a little earlier this afternoon? And at the beginning of the program, we mentioned Beth Vey's upcoming radio program, which is really interesting. I talked with her for about 10 minutes earlier. Why don't we go to that now, and then we can come back and finish up?
That's a great idea. In the meanwhile, I'll take notes.
Artist, author, and now talk show host Beth Vey joins us on PID Radio. Beth, welcome back.
Thanks, Derek.
You've got a new project in the works that looks very exciting. Tell us about it.
Ancient Future Radio. It's basically, the way I put it was broadcasting into the future and the past. I will basically be discussing subjects from the ancient texts, and John Lair will be handling more updated information like UFOlogy.
Mm-hmm. Now, people who aren't familiar with John Lair, who is he?
John Lear is the son of the man who created the Lear jet, and he also was a highly decorated pilot who flew countless missions in almost every kind of aircraft you can imagine. And I think it said he has personally received awards for the most hours logged in every kind of flying machine, except dirigibles and hot air balloons.
But he's got some insights into, as you say, modern ufology.
Yes, he also was in the CIA. He received, because of who he was and because of his connections to his dad, who was heavily involved, of course, in the whole community of flight of any kind, you know, from jets to rocket ships, and he knew a lot of those people. He received anonymously negatives of the original Apollo moon landing photographs of the crater Copernicus and other areas. He purchased books from that time frame. During that time frame, he purchased books that contained photographs of the various moon landings, photographs that astronauts themselves had taken as they were landing. And these were untouched, considering the time frame. They were untouched to the degree that a lot of the information could be seen in it once graphics programs were designed. I don't think at the time that they were considering the potential that the average consumer would be able to get a photograph of the moon and put it into a graphics program, zoom in on it, and see what's going on in the picture. And there's all kinds of anomalies in these things. I mean, just that would put Richard Hoagland's information almost to shame, if it were possible.
So that's one of the topics that you'll be covering in your new show, Ancient Future.
Right. We will be covering anomalies on the moon, on other planets, such as the Europa anomaly. There is also subjects relating to the Bible, relating to the ancient texts of other civilizations. We have a guest host coming up who studied all the ancient Americas. We have Michael Heiser, who is Dr. Michael Heiser.
Yes.
Who is extremely well-educated in all the ancient texts from the Middle East, which I just find so fascinating. he can take that Bible and break it down into its bare parts.
and one of the few Bible scholars who takes that information and applies it to modern ufology. That should be a fascinating show. Anytime Mike does anything, whether it's on secular radio such as Coast to Coast, I've had the opportunity to interview him a couple times on my secular show, or on a show such as yours or PID Radio. Boy, it's worth the trouble to track it down and give it a thorough listening. Well, this sounds like a really exciting topic and really exciting for a couple of ways, because you will get a lot of information out there that. It is somewhat difficult to find. And John Lear, again, people may not realize, but John Lear was the first guy that Art Bell called when Art Bell did his very first coast-to-coast AM radio show. The night that Art Bell decided he was sick of talking politics and wanted to get into talking para-politics, if you will, John Lear was his first guest. So this is quite a coup. When is the show going to be on, and where? How can people listen to it?
The first showing will be on March 9th, Friday night. 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Central, and midnight Eastern.
As this show is going to air on Sunday, March 4th of 2007, for people listening, that would mean it's coming up in less than a week, this coming Friday night.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And you're going to be hosting this show?
Right. Myself and John Lear.
Okay.
He won't be at every show. He'll only be in those shows that pertain to subject matters that he personally knows about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be handling the topics that are more about the ancient texts, and he'll be handling stuff that's more ufology related and more modernized, I guess you could say. That's why it's called Ancient and Future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, I wanted to mention that Michael Heiser and I are going to discuss the connections to the serpent and how it fits into the whole seraphs and reptilian thing. I just think that's interesting. I think a lot of people are interested in that subject, and mm-hmm. I think that Michael can shed a lot of... am I over my time?
No. That's just the other bat phone here in the in the broadcast compound here in the bunker. Sharon will be grabbing that here in just a second.
Oh, it makes pretty music.
Yeah, it does. It's a lot more entertaining than the typical phone ring. So, kind of a happy sound, which is good, because occasionally we'll get rings at very early in the morning. You know, so and so didn't show up for a show. It makes it at least tolerable to wake up to that. This is really interesting, because again, it all comes back to the early chapters of Genesis, in which we're told that Eve and Adam confronted a serpent, but I think the impression we have is incorrect and given to us by the limits of the English language in translating ancient Hebrew. It really wasn't a serpent, was it?
No, I don't think it was really a serpent in the sense of how we think of snakes today. No, not a serpent.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to mention, and in addition to that, David Cereda is going to be on there, and he was the man who did the video called Evidence, a Case for NASA UFOs, and he's got a lot of interesting information, too, in regards to NASA messing with data, changing, it's all about the NASA cover-up, I guess mm-hmm. you could say. Plus, he has he's found a lot of connections to the ancient texts from the stuff about the ufology that I think are really interesting additional ways of looking at the information. I believe he said, was at one time he was a Christian for sure, and I don't know if he's not anymore, or if that's even possible to not be anymore. I think the Bible says that once you're in his hand, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I know that there are others who believe you can backslide, but that's a topic that's been argued for 2,000 years. And
that's a controversial one there, wasn't it?
Well, again, Beth, this is the first show's coming up Friday night. What time will it be on, and where do people go in order to hear Ancient Future?
You go to thestargates.com/pod. So it's thestargates.com/pod, P-O-D, P as in Paul, mm-hmm. O-D as in David. And that it will be on Friday, March 9th, for the very first time, mm-hmm. at 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Central, 12 midnight Eastern time.
Okay. And the 12 midnight Eastern is, for people listening outside the United States, that's GMT minus 5. Got to remember now that with the Internet, you're essentially globally syndicated. And it's going to be on. It's going to be on every Friday night at midnight Eastern?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And will the shows be archived and podcast for people who can't hear it live?
They will be archived. Podcast? What? I'm not exactly sure. I know that there's on the site itself where the archives are kept of the show. There are various ways that you can subscribe to it, including I believe iPod, iTunes.
Well, the term podcast basically means that you can subscribe to it and then automatically have iTunes downloaded or another pod catching type software.
Right.
Yes. So you if you can subscribe,
subscribe to
it,
iTunes.
So the answer then is yes. Yes, the show will be podcast. People can automatically download with iTunes or another pod catching software. So excellent. Well, that sounds great. And while you're on live, will you be able to take calls from listeners?
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yes, and I'm going to have another interesting set of guests on my show named Derek and Sherry Gilbert on the 6th of April, 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Central, 12 midnight Eastern.
Well, we're looking forward to that because every time we've talked with you on PID Radio, Beth, it's been a fascinating discussion. And you know, it's certainly not because we bring anything to the table. It's you've done great research.
Baloney.
We're just curious people who are curious enough that we pick up the phone and call other people and ask them to talk to us. And so we've been blessed in that regard. So looking forward to Ancient Future. Again, it's thestargates.com/pod. And we'll put a link to this in the show notes at PID Radio tonight. And the first show this coming up Friday, which is March the 9th at midnight Eastern time, which is GMT minus 5. And first guest again this Friday night is who?
John Lear and
John Lear.
Ron Zorgon Schmidt. He's working on a book called The Living Moon for John Lear. And he and John have done a lot of study and research, and it should be an interesting conversation.
All right. Beth, looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us on PID Radio, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right.
You know, that Beth Vey, she has done so much research, and I'm really looking forward to that podcast. But, you know, I did think of it while we were listening to that. I did think of it. It's the discovery of the over 5,000-year-old city that there is evidence may have something to do with Uruk.
That's really amazing. Uruk was the center of Nimrod's kingdom, and of course that is the city upon which the name of modern Iraq is based.
Nimrod, Osiris, same thing.
Exactly, Hercules.
Exactly.
Yeah. The city was also, in the Bible it was known as Erech, E-R-E-C-H. Mm-hmm. So it's referred to in the Bible. It's, again, one of the oldest cities. In fact, we talked about this with Tom Horn. There was a discovery at of the ancient city of Hamukar, Hamoukar, a couple of years ago, and they said it was the evidence of the first recorded battle in history. They were using these little clay balls as slingshots, sort of like clay bullets.
That's right.
And that's where they found that cache of eye idols that we talked about, these little things that were apparently all over the ancient Near East. And when you look at them, these little clay models look like E.T.
They do. They are so creepy.
Weird.
It really makes you wonder if Steven Spielberg hadn't seen those.
Yes, and used that as the model for the character
because,
in E.T.
Because, you know, when I saw that character, when I saw the movie the first time, I thought, where did you get that look?
Yeah, but they look just like the eye idols, which were not just found in Hamukar, but all over the ancient Near East.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently the battle, based on the clay bullets that were found, and some of the other pottery that was left behind outside the walls of Hamukar, apparently came from Uruk. And it's possible that was, you know, the timing was right. I mean, I know it's a long shot, but it's possible, based on the timeline of history, that battle at Hamukar against the forces of Uruk, that this was a city that was trying to hold out against the army of Nimrod.
Oh, that's amazing.
So anyway, this discovery by the Spanish scientific team appears to have found the ancient city of Uruk.
Now, it's in Syria. Is that correct?
Yes. No, now this, okay, this series.
Okay, the second site. I see the beginning of excavations at the new site are scheduled for sometime in 2008, given that the process for getting permission to conduct an archaeological dig in Syria moves very slowly. So is there a second site?
Okay, I see what's happening here. That this was based on the, this is a concurrent with the Uruk culture. So this is in Syria. Uruk, of course, was in southeastern Iraq, not far from where the modern cities near the Persian Gulf are located, like down in the area of...
Okay, I was confused by that.
Yeah, it's not very well written. Yeah.
But then again, you know, the modern day borders aren't fixed in stone. They're just lines on a map.
Mm-hmm.
So where one kingdom ended and another began at that time may not be the same as now.
Yeah. So this is, they don't actually give a name of the city. It's Tal Humeida, T-A-L, second word, H-U-M-E-A-D-A. A Syrian and Spanish team are working on this. It is about 90 miles from the border with Iraq on the left bank of the Euphrates, which would make sense as culture spread from the cradle of civilization down there near the Persian Gulf. It would go up the Euphrates, up the Tigris, and use the river. So... but the time period dates back to the same period of time as the height of the Uruk culture, which was, again, supposedly the center of Nimrod's kingdom. So
that is amazing.
Very interesting stuff, though, and I'd be very curious to see what they discovered there again. Yeah. More eye idols, perhaps?
Perhaps. It's so easy. And I don't think it's just true of the United States people. I really don't. I think it's true of anyone. You grow up in your own little community. And it's very easy to think that all the world revolves around your community or your country, especially when your country claims to be the leader of the free world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not free, we'll come free you.
Yeah, whether you want it or not.
Exactly. But the stuff here is, unless you look at the Native American culture, you know, stuff here as far as, you know, the frankly, the white European culture isn't that old. And the real ancient stuff, the stuff that goes back 6,000-7,000 years, is over in the Middle East.
Yeah. And it's not hard to see why the fascination with that period of history can translate into misguided worship through the works of people like Zechariah Sitchin. You know, okay, yeah, the Sumerians were seeing ancient astronauts when they saw the Anunnaki. I mean, they really did see Anunnaki. They were just not gods. They were just ancient astronauts. Or you get the other group, like the Sir Lawrence Gardner group, that believe that they're descended from this this bloodline.
That bloodline thing is very important, the blood.
Right. And in fact, I think it's interesting that Sir Lawrence Gardner, the guy who believes that the royals of Europe, the royal dragon court, are descended from Enki and the other ancient Sumerian gods, he was the first one to put forth the belief that this lost tomb of Jesus... being promoted now by James Cameron, was, in fact, the lost tomb of Jesus. He put out a book about this back in 1996. Mike Heiser wrote a paper in rebuttal several years ago, which he presented, interestingly, to a meeting of the Ancient Near East Archaeological Society. Mm-hmm. Basically said, you know, there are 22 other bone boxes that have been discovered in and around Jerusalem with the name Jesus inscribed on it.
The head of antiquities in Jerusalem has come out against it.
Yeah.
If he has, you know, of all things, he would want to say, oh, no Jesus,
sure.
No Christ, forget it, your Messiah, not there, ours is the Messiah, and he hasn't come yet.
He hasn't, right. And he hasn't spoken out and said that.
No.
Many of the voices that are speaking out against this lost tomb of Jesus are not Christian.
They don't have a dog in the fight.
They don't have a dog in the fight. But interestingly, like I said, the first guy who really put forth this idea was the guy who believes that the heads of Europe are descendants, literal descendants, of the Anunnaki, the fallen gods of ancient Sumer. Coincidence? I'll leave that to you.
So. Well. There's one more thing, though, that's related to this. Well, we're on archaeology. And we're talking about fallen angels and mythology and gods.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring you a love story. Now, we just had Valentine's Day recently.
I like the way your brain thinks. I wouldn't have gone that way with this story at all. Go ahead.
Long ago, these two were separated. They were together for who knows how many hundreds of years, holding hands, sitting next to each other, sharing their love, spawning gods and goddesses all over the place. Well, folks, they're back together again. Yes, indeed, Zeus and Hera have been reunited.
And they're back in town. Where was this located?
At the foot of Olympus.
The foot of Olympus. That's a really interesting location, sure.
Dionysus?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, city of Dion.
I was thinking, and the Belmonts, but that's
me. What I would like to know is, as far as just looking at the language itself, if that is associated in any way, shape, or form with Zion.
Good question.
I don't know. All I know is just a little bit of language, and it's enough to get me in a lot of trouble.
Right, because the way they've been anglicized don't necessarily fit. Yeah, the statue of Hera was discovered, and not far from the ancient statue of Zeus. Both of them are still missing their heads.
Mm.
So, yeah, when you say they've been separated.
They just go back to, Theon or something, and have to do with God. City of God or something. I don't know.
Probably so. The excavation work down at this site in Greece has been taking place over the last 37 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, they found Zeus a couple of years ago.
Yeah, in 2003.
And the interesting thing about this, you may have said this a second ago, so forgive me. My brain was, I was looking, thinking dog. It was the double statue.
Mm-hmm.
You see these statues all the time of the single gods, and these were life-size. Now, when I read life-size in the story originally, I looked at you and I said, they found a giant statue of Zeus, of Hera, and she goes with Zeus. And then I thought, wait a minute, maybe by life-size they mean life-size according to a man's height now.
Yeah. Well, really interesting. The statue's 2,200 years old, about 40 miles southwest of the port city of Thessalonica.
Neither one has a head.
Neither one has a head. Zeus is missing his right arm. Apparently that was the arm that was holding on to Hera.
Well, she's missing part of her left, so
holding hands. Right.
Long ago, lovers cleaved in the middle of an invasion. Who knows?
Interesting, though, because, again, as we look at where the ancient veneration, of Hera, Zeus, and the other ancient gods came from, we know that it was based on the fallen.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least this is
Osiris and Isis.
Osiris and Isis, right.
This is God and Mary.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying that because I believe that.
No, absolutely not.
But that's, sadly, if she's going to be a co-redemptrix.
There is a strong contingent within the Roman Catholic Church that is pushing for Mary to be declared co-redemptrix. And if she has moved to that point, then we have seen the Roman Catholic Church essentially turned into a...
I think in many ways the veneration of Mary is absolutely misplaced. And
yes.
That's another show
because we are running out of time. But, as we said before, the forum is back online. We let things cool down a bit. And with some of the reorganization and the time pressures taken off of Sharon especially, the forum is open back up again. And we welcome your comments there. It's peeringinthedarkness.com/forum.
And we would love to hear from you if you just want to send us a note, if you want to crab about something we've said or if you have something that we've perhaps missed, send us a note at radio@peeringinthedarkness.com. Also, we will be posting pictures of our new dog soon. You know, one of the names that I actually thought would work was Buster. That way he could be our
Bunker
Buster.
And on that note, we'll leave you until next week. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and there's something. Waving goodbye. Bye-bye, everybody.
Cutting-edge news and analysis on demand. This is PID Radio.
Catherine Adamson thought she was going back to her quiet hometown of Eden, Indiana, to settle the affairs of her late Aunt Celeste. Instead, she discovers that Eden has literally gone to hell. Two high school students have disappeared, leaving behind only a running car and a bloody shoe. Strange lights have appeared over the town, and the fields of a local farm are marked with blackened circles. Eden County Hospital reports record births, incredibly large babies joining the ranks of a growing number of giants. Many of Eden's leading citizens have been hiding evil secrets, but their behavior has been closely watched by the mysterious Dr. Apollo Bell, head of the Mount Hermon Institute. All of Eden is a war camp, and citizens must choose sides in an eternal battle. Catherine is reunited with her old flame, Joshua Carpenter, the publisher of the Eden Chronicle. They quickly learn their strongest ally may be John Thundercloud, a legless old Winnebago Indian who spends his days writing line after line in a library full of tattered diaries. It's Winds of Evil by Sharon K. Gilbert, book one of the Laodicea Chronicles. Available now online and at bookstores everywhere.
They're coming from the darkness. Over 6,000 years ago, the citizens of Mesopotamia encountered them.
Down through time, tens of thousands of people on every continent of the world have etched their likeness on the walls of caves, chiseled statues of them from solid stone, and prayed prayers to their highest gods to be delivered from them.
But prophecy says they will return, and at a time when Babylon, modern Iraq, and Iran is invaded and destroyed. This spring, exclusively from RaidersNewsUpdate.com, we'll tell you what you need to know about them. In the book-length ebook, Stargates, Ancient Rituals, and Those Invited Through the Portal.